The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Good evening, everyone. Kfeir all the Rabbonim, Rebbetzins, friends. Welcome to our Rosh Chodesh dinner for Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and I do hope that everyone is certainly enjoying themselves. Polarization of the Jewish people, its benefits and dangers. Excuse me one minute. We have a technical problem. Polarization of the Jewish people has benefits and dangers. It is not a new concept to Israel that when we speak of Israel, the Ami, Israel and the nations of the world, that we keep ourselves separate. In the Sedra that we are going to read about the giving of the Torah, the Almighty said to us, "Ba'ato im shamoa tishmu b'keili," if you will listen to my voice, and you will keep my commandments, be assembly skula mikolo amin, you will be the chosen, the most precious nation amongst all of the nations. Ba'atem tiyuli mamleches kahanim b'gei kodosh, and you will be an empire of kings, and you will be a sanctified nation. And this is through the guarding of the 613 mitzvahs. Again, we have at the end of Parashas Kedoshim, "Va'avdil eschem mino amim liyos li," I have separated you from the nations of the world that you shall be for me. Bilam, who was the evil prophet, couldn't help exclaiming, "Hen am the vodo jishkoi, uvagoim le ischashov." This is a nation which dwells by itself, and they will not be counted together with the other nations. And in the tefillahs and the prayers of the Yom Tovim, we always exclaim, "Matov v'chavtonu mikol v'amim, v'remamtonu mikol hashenes." You have chosen us from all of the nations. You have uplifted us from all of the peoples of the world. So therefore, this is not a strange concept to us at all. But, tragically, a phenomenon has developed in the world. And that is, we see that there is a separation, a polarization within the ranks of Israel between Jew and Jew. So much where already it's taken for granted. And this, unfortunately, is not something that is traditional. Let me quote a few excerpts from a very, very extensive survey. Results were released a few years ago, and they are still being studied. This was a survey launched by the Jewish Education Services of North America. It was sponsored by the Council of Jewish Federations of the United States, and it was called the National Jewish Population Survey of American Jewry. American Jewry, the largest Jewish community, the wealthiest Jewish community in the world. The research was conducted by CCNY, City University of New York, and it was to find out the state of Jewish education, assimilation, intermarriage of the American Jew. many, many years of preparation went into this survey. They came to the conclusion that there's an estimated as much as 8.5 million Jews in America. And these are some of the things which they found out, which shocked the North American public. They found out that of over 2 million Jewish children under 18 years old, only 46% of them are being raised as Jews. 54% are not. 16% are being raised with no religion. 38% are being raised in other religions. As high as 40% of the Jewish population of America deny their Jewishness. From 85 to 90% of American Jews are indifferent and Jewishly ignorant. Estimated 10 to 15% of American Jewry are educated and committed or knowledgeable Jews. Incidentally, this could be home to approximately half of the Jews of the world. There's a Dr. Jacob Euclid, who was the guest speaker at the Rabbinical Council of America conference. He's been a foremost expert in this field, where he has worked and written extensively on the subject and has been a consultant to the American Jewish Federations. He says, if we stretch the point, we can say 10% of American Jewry is Orthodox. Realistically, his estimate is probably closer to 5%. This means in an America, in a room of 100 Jews, 90 will not affiliate themselves with Orthodoxy. The survey found that in 1900, there was a 4% intermarriage rate. 1940, 6%. In this decade, it has reached 52% intermarriage. 52% is the national average, which means that in the smaller communities, it goes up to as high as 75%. They have found further that the two greatest impacts that they felt that has united world Jewry, the Holocaust and Zionism, have become irrelevant to Jewish youth. We must remember the State of Israel was founded 50 years ago. The Jewish youth who are 18 years, 20 years old, you're speaking about something ancient. The Holocaust was over 50 years ago. To us, this is not history. This was in many ways personal experiences. But not to the youth. They have found that these have become irrelevant. Zionism is bankrupt in North America. And what is developing is a totally non-Israel Zionist culture. The comment that Dr. Seymour Lachman, Dean of CCNY, which conducted the study, as a summary conclusion, said as follows. Quote, we must conclude that the vast majority of American Jews, probably primarily due to a lack of adequate Jewish education and positive Jewish experiences, see Judaism as irrelevant to their lives. They are uninterested, uninvolved, and uneducated, dropping off and dropping out. Another quote by Rabbi Pinchas Stolper, he Executive Vice President of the Orthodox Union of Jewish Congregations. That's the OU. We are experiencing one of the greatest crises in Jewish history. Another quote from Rabbi Ephraim Buchholz, founder and director of National Jewish Outreach Program in USA. It is the silent Holocaust of American Jewry. Another quote, the rising tides of assimilation and intermarriage are threatening to wash away an entire segment of the Jewish nation. Now, when we say America, this means North America, but this is more or less the picture in most of the world. This is the picture in Europe. This is the picture in South America. This is across the board. But there's another point which surprised the analysts and the community leaders. And this is a phenomenon. This is happening at a time when the American religious Jewry has been experiencing a renaissance, a golden age of development since post-war World War II. For example, before the Second World War, there were merely 16 Torah educational institutions in North America. This was of the full-time Torah educational institutions. Today, there's an organization in America called Torah Mesorah, which their goal is to establish Jewish full-time day schools in every city possible. They themselves have established 560 since the Second World War. Independent organizations, the many, many different Hasidic organizations have established another between 1,000 and 2,000 day schools. So we've seen approximately 2,500 day schools being built in America since the Second World War. We have seen the proliferation of religious orthodoxy, religious shuls, shtiblach, beis medrashes, yeshivas, Hasidic groups, Shabbos and Yom Tov observance, more sukkahs, more lulavim, more esraigim, more yarmulkes, more Arabs, more kosher restaurants, more mahadrim than the country ever experienced. We have seen the boom of American and international Baal Tshuva and Kiruv movements. So this is a phenomenon that from one end the American Jew is vanishing, and from the other aspect he's experiencing a Torah renaissance. Rabbi Pinchas Tolper said the following: the American Jewish community is like two trains running on parallel tracks, but in opposite directions. The Orthodox are developing a golden age of Torah observance, while secular Jews are deteriorating spiritually and are becoming smaller in numbers. We are seeing a separation, an elitism. One rabbi, a prominent rabbi in America, wrote that it is almost unbelievable that these two communities that we're referring to, that coexist side by side, have almost no influence whatsoever one on the other. Now, this is not an American problem. As I mentioned, this is the trend all over the world. Tragically, in our own Eretz Yisrael, from many aspects it's worse. Not so much from the assimilation or the intermarriage aspect, but where two communities have developed with an enormous gulf between them. You have two camps. One is experiencing a golden age, a boon, but it seems to have almost no influence on the other. And in Eretz Yisrael, many times it's worse because there's animosity between the two camps. In America, each one goes their own way. But in Eretz Yisrael, there's a power struggle as to who will run the country. Now, it is true that historically we have found that sometimes we have to withdraw, we have to put up a wall around ourselves to protect ourselves from threats of even Jew against Jew. Like the Haggadah Shel Pesach says, Rosh Mohu Eimer, the four sons. One is the wicked son, Mo'aveira Azeis Lochem, where he comes to threaten us, he comes to attack us. Hake Yeshinov, we are told not to have anything to do with him. And historically, this has been true from time to time. And this is beneficial. Altiskabel Rosho, Harchik Mishochim Anah. Keep your distance from the evil. Keep your distance from a bad neighbor. But this, firstly, is only when it comes to dealing with Rishoyim, with those who are wicked, evil. Not the majority of Achenu B'nai Yisrael, of our brothers, Jewish brethren in the world, She'enim Yodim Bein Yumin Usmol, where they don't know the difference between their right hand and their left hand when it comes to what is right and wrong in the eyes of the Torah. Like the Haggadah Shel Pesach says, there's the Tam, there's the Nia Delishon, there's the son who doesn't know, there's the son who can't even ask. At Shachlei, to him we are obligated to go and to teach. Secondly, if historically we ever followed such a route, this was of a temporary measure. This was a Hirai Shor. This was not something which became permanent measures in which to sever a major portion of the nation of Israel and write them off. And let me cite a few sources on this. The Tanakh relates a very, very well-known episode of Pilegesh Begibo. There was a concubine that one evening, one night, she was abused and molested and eventually killed. And this was in the territory of Binyamin. And the other tribes were overwhelmed. They were outraged that this should happen in Israel. And they demanded Binyamin to take action. And they refused. And this created a war. The other tribes went up to war against Binyamin. And many lives were lost. And because of this, the other tribes accepted a vow that they will separate themselves from Binyamin. And they will not allow any of their daughters to get married to the sons of Binyamin. This lasted for a while, and then they annulled the vow, because they saw that the tribe of Binyamin was becoming smaller in number. And the commentaries say why? Because they knew that the Shekhinah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will only dwell in Israel, only with all of the tribes. And if they will lose one, this will be a loss for the whole nation. Another example, Gemara brings in Masechta Shabbos, whoever's in a position to influence someone, to direct someone in the proper path of Torah, and he does not do so, nitfas ba'aveinai, be'esha oven, he carries responsibility for that person's sins. If he's in a position to influence his household and he doesn't, he carries that responsibility. B'nei Irai, he's in a position to influence a whole city and he doesn't, he's responsible. Kol Ha'elam, if he's a king and he doesn't use his influence for good, he's responsible. And the Maral Miprag, the rabbi of Prague, says why? Because all of Israel is like one body. And if part of a body is not functioning properly, then the whole body suffers. We cannot say the mind cannot tell the foot, it's your problem. It becomes a problem for all of us. And each organ of the body carries different responsibilities. Foot will carry one responsibility, a finger will carry another, but the heart will carry far more responsibility. The brain will carry even more. And so is it with the standing of every individual in Israel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands from him. Therefore, if someone was in a position where he could influence many, and he does not, this damages the whole nation, and he's held responsible. And it's for this reason, as our chairman mentioned this morning, in this week's Pasha states, "Who has raised from an Athena in Israel, from the bottom of the count, human in Israel?" The sages want to know why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why is the Almighty always counting the people so many times? He's commanding to count the people, to take census, as we understand. There are those who are always preoccupied with demographics. They want to know, but what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu mean this for? And the Midrash brings, you take the bosom, the funnel, Maina Isam the Kol Shaw, because it is love for every individual. And we were commanded to count. It was a big undertaking, a benefit of the whole nation. But the Baruch Hu doesn't want to lose even one. And therefore he commands to count everyone. And therefore when the Almighty chose leaders, divine sanction. It states that Moses was a shepherd. And he was shepherding his sheep into the desert. There he saw the bush was being burnt and it wasn't consumed. And that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu started the most glorious dialogue. First time he spoke with Moshe. The sages question, what does the sheep and the shepherd have to do with the burning of the bush? And they answer, Moshe had gone off because one of the sheep had run away. And he chased it to find it. And then he carried it back. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Yesh lecha ra'ach min lina yitzeinei shel basar adam. You have compassion even on a sheep of flesh and blood. And even one sheep you don't want to lose. Then you come and you'll be the shepherd of my nation. Because this is the type of leader that I need. And then the sages tell us, the same with David HaMelech, King David. He also was a shepherd. What did he used to do? And he would bring out his sheep in the morning to the new grazing grounds. He would hold back all of the sheep and let the old ones go first. And they would find the soft grass, and they would eat that grass. Then when they were finished, he would let the real young ones go next. And they would find the next grass, and they would eat that. And then only after that would he let the healthy ones and the strong ones go. They were capable of eating even the hard grass. And of course, Baruch said, he said, Yodea lirai son ish tefi kaichai. You know how to care for every individual sheep and goat in accordance to their own strength. Yomer v'yiret seini. You should come, you will come and take care of my sheep. And when Moses was asking for a successor before he died, he said, Ish asher ruach bai. Choose someone sheyele keneged ruchesh o kol ish v'ish, that will be able to stand up and be able to identify with the individual needs of every person. And Aaron and the Kohanim, they especially were appointed to keep the Achdus, the unity of Israel, through their Beis HaMikdash. Have you mitalmidim shel Aaron HaKohen, ye from the disciples of Aaron, Oed Shalom, Reinev Shalom, Eves HaBriya Yisrael Makarim L'Torah. Aaron was the one that loved all the people, he loved peace, he pursued it, and he would bring them all close to Torah. And we find that even the Torah itself, and even Eretz Yisrael and our Beis HaMikdash, relies on the unity and the wholeness of the nation. As we came to the Mount Sinai, it states by Yichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ahor, the nation camped as one individual, leif echor, one heart, without machlekes, with no dissension and no division, to receive the Torah. And again, the Rabbi of Prague says this was necessary to receive the Torah, because the Torah is one and the nation is one, and their souls are bound up with each other, and they were bringing in the entire Torah to the world. They had to be one. And this is why the Talmud states there will be a time when we will not be able to find Mishnah Brura and Halacha Brura b'mokem echo. We will not be able to find Torah in one place. It will be scattered a little there and a little here, the wisdom of Torah, because Israel will be scattered. And this is why the sages say we lost our land and our Beis HaMikdash, because of the Sinas Chinam and the Machlekes. There was division and polarization in Israel amongst the people. Then we lost the land and the Beis HaMikdash, which unifies Israel, relies on its unity. Now, I might be a little out of step with current times, because today the trend is separatism, extremism, polarization of camps. But I had the great privilege to learn by the sages of the last generation, Gedolei Nitta, the great sages of this millennium. And I must tell you what they said and what I learned from them. I came to Telz, it was 1953, 45 years ago. And there were the Telz Rosh Hashivas, started to come over to America during the 40s, post-war, during the war. The Telzers themselves in particular were from the family of the great Blazer Gordon, who was a disciple from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Descendants, disciples of the great Gaon of Vilna. And a few of the things that I remember very vividly. It was said that when they came to America to transplant the first Lithuanian yeshiva to America, they were told, build in New York, because this is the only place where Yiddishkeit will grow. And the late Rabbi Meir Bloch, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, said, what is there with the rest of America? The rest of America, forget about. He said, no. He says, we didn't come to teach Torah to New York. We came to do Torah for America. Went out of New York. Remotkai Kass, the brother of Rabbi Meir, when he spoke at the Yortzeit of Rabbi Meir, he brought out very strongly, he said, Rabbi Meir became to Cleveland, there was no day school. He never spoke of building a day school for our own children. He said, we have to build a day school for all of the children of the city. And he suffered great compromises of his own standards in order to accommodate a basic school for all of the city. And I used to hear them say that. We compromised great standards of education of our own children in order to accommodate the great numbers of the city. And in general, it was always said under Rabbi Meir that besides compromising always on his health, on his personal endeavors of wealth, in order to build Torah in America, he compromised on his own personal perfections and standards. He gave up enormous time of his own learning. He published in his lifetime no sport, no manuscripts. Didn't have time. In order that he should be able to serve the tzibur, the Jewish nation, which he did with the greatest of simcha and privilege. I remember speaking to the Pelzer Rosh Hashiva Ramachai Gifter, this was in 1962, and he said he was disappointed with the trend that was taking place in America at that time. At that time, the graduates of the yeshivas, which were newly founded in America, were leaving the yeshivas, they were getting married, and they started to set up their own shtiblach, their own bate midrashim, where they would keep together. The bnei yeshiva would keep together. And I remember him saying, they should be projecting themselves and interjecting themselves into the shuls of the community in order to strengthen the overall Jewish situation, not withdrawing and only strengthening themselves and their families. And he was disappointed with the trend. Today it's a fait accompli. This was talking there 30 years ago. And in the 1980s, when the Balei Tshuva movements we're taking off. He said publicly, he says, for every one that we give, we lose 10. He was very keenly aware of the American scene. This was not only Tells, this was the Nathaniel Lane. The Nitfishians, which are particularly close to South African Jewry, where they come from. I remember when we had made a decision to come here to South Africa, which was 25 years ago. Nathan mentioned this, it was 20, but we came here 5 years before. And we spent 5 or 6 weeks in Eretz Yisrael en route. And almost everyone we met told us not to come. Many, many South Africans that lived there. Others, why are you going to South Africa? What will happen with your children? At that time, South Africa wasn't what it is today. What will happen with your children? And what will happen with this? And what will happen with that? And it was getting discouraging. And then we met. This was in the Hotel de Bord of the Sukkah in Tel Aviv. We saw a Jew. Very, very wonderful looking Jew. And very friendly looking. And I asked who it was. They told me that was Rav David Lifshitz. He came along. Rav David Lifshitz was the Rosh Yeshiva at that time of Yeshiva Rav Yitzchok Hom, Yeshiva University. He was actually the Tzubok Rav. He was a Rav in Tzubok. This was a Litvish community of 35 shuls. And he had come to America. And he had come to Eretz Yisrael, where he was supporting the campaign for Ezra's Torah. I went over to him and introduced myself. He asked me, where are you going, this and that. I told him. He did everything possible. Then, while we were in Eretz Yisrael, and in all the years to follow, to strengthen us, to encourage us, to help us in our goals of going to South Africa to build Torah. Totally contrary to what we had heard from anyone else. And he insisted, he were making a lot of malka for him, and he told him, he insisted that I and my Rebbe must come. And we came, and there was Rav Unterman, Zichei Nevorocha, chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Zalta Zichrei Levracha, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, and he took me around to every one of them. And he says, I get to bring Africa, so Shachan David is going to South Africa to build Torah. And he insisted that whenever I come back to America, I must come to visit him. And then he told me on one visit, he said, we didn't want to come to America. He remembers he was sitting in the house of the Kovner Rav. And we didn't want to come to America. And the Kovner Rav said, go to America. In America there'll be millions of Jews. And who will teach them Torah? And he said, look what we did in America. Everyone else was saying, this is a trefa land, don't go there. Now, they had very, very strong sources. Now, further, they taught their Talmidim, their disciples, don't make barriers. Don't make differences. Don't make divisions. Not only that, but do whatever you can to minimize the differences between you and the other group. So you'll be able to have some influence on him. And they supported this with some sources I would like to quote. In the Tanakh we learn there was a great prophet by the name of Shmuel, Samuel. He was to become the great Madrich Torah, a great teacher of Torah. His father was Elkanah. His mother was Hannah. And it states, right at the beginning of Samuel, the Olo ha'ishahu me'iroi me'yomim yamimo ishtachveis v'ishbeach la'ashem tzavokais b'shiva, that Elkanah would go up every year to Shiloh. That's where the sanctuary was, to bring offerings to the sanctuary. But it states, Miyomim Yemimo, he would go from time to time. There's a very strange description. What does this mean? And the Medrash Yal Kishmoni states, Elkanah would go up, and he'd come through a city, and the people would ask him, where are you going? And he would come with his wife and his sons, his whole household, and he would even camp in the streets of the city. And people would say, where are you going? And he would say, the Beis Hashem, Shebishilai, we're going to the house of Hashem, Shemisham takes a Torah and Mitzvahs, and their Torah and Mitzvahs come. Do you also want to come with us? Come with us. And the people would start to shed tears. And they would say, can we come with you? And he says, yes. And the next year, more would come. And the next year, more would come. And the reason why it says, Yumima, Yomin Yumimai, because one year he would go in one way, the next year he would go in another way. So more people could see how his family would go up to Shiloh. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Atah hikrata shishol kaschus, you went out of your way in order to teach Israel and in order to influence them and bring them close to me. And you taught them these mitzvahs, v'chinach them the mitzvahs. V'zoch rabim al yotcha, many became meritorious because of you. I will give you a son that will also do this for Israel. And through this award, Samuel, Shmuel, the great prophet, was born to him. This reminds me of a response to Moshe Weinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, where someone told him he was davening in a shul, and the people were not that of such a high standard. Should he leave and go to a shul of a higher caliber? And the Moshe writes back and says, he says, if they're doing things in that shul which is totally non-acceptable, then you have no choice. But if they keep the halacha, except they're not such of the standard that you would like to see, he says, better stay. Because the hot order, they have a little light, expels great darkness. You'll have influence on it. We have from the Mesilas Yesharim, this is the works, the classical works of the great Moshe Chaim Tzatzal. The Vilna Gaon could not stop praising his works. He writes two things. He says, the Torah commanded us, Echeach Tochiach Hasam Yisrael, that you should rebuke your fellow man. But many times you come to rebuke a person at a time when he won't listen to you, or under circumstances where he won't listen to you. And through this you will cause him to even go further away from Torah. And to add more hate. He says, this you'll be held in account for. And he's speaking here about the level of chassidus. Chassidus means saintliness.
He says, in such a case, in such a case, the saintliness is decided. And this is what our sages have said. The saints in mitzvah, just like as a mitzvah, to say something to someone else that he will listen to, so is it a mitzvah to keep silent when you know that someone will not listen to you. Because you can drive them even further away. We see from here that one has to be very careful of his actions. If a person's actions will create an animosity or will drive someone further away from them, even though he means well, he's held in account. And then he writes another case. King David said, King David, you know, was a monarch. He was a political figure. He had to meet with kings, statesmen, and he said that I will speak of your statutes even in the presence of kings, and I will not be ashamed. And so the Rashi kind of Tzatzal writes, when it comes to our Yiddishkeit, we have to be as pinomer. We have to be as courageous as a leopard. But, he said, it's also man's sake. Because all of this refers to the actual mitzvah. The minimal requirements of the mitzvah, which we have to keep under all circumstances. There we must be uncompromising. He says, what about the Tosfos Chassidus? What about that we add to a mitzvah in order to do it a little better? The Chassidus, the Chumra, the Kibur. What about that? He says, there many times if you do it in the presence of the simple people, they will laugh at you. They will scoff at you. And it comes out that you have caused them to sin further. And meanwhile, you could have not done that because it wasn't an absolute obligation. Therefore, in such a case, for sure, it is better to refrain. The Harbe Hasidim, he says. She Anicheu, Kama Hasidim, the Menichu, the Menobi Hasidim. They gave up temporarily these Hidurim, these extras, when they were amongst the simple people, amongst the populace, in order that this should not happen. And that's what it states about Shnei Leches Imala Kecho. They would fulfill these things in private. This brings to mind another responsor from Moshe Feinstein. There was a question, in America you have what is called blended whiskey. It was a whiskey with a little wine mixed into it. And since it wasn't made under proper supervision, so there was a question on it. So they brought it to Moshe Feinstein. So he goes through the whole question very extensively, and he came out, he says, look, according to the basic law, it would be permissible for various reasons under those circumstances, but, he said, there were those rabbinical authorities that prohibited it. Therefore, he said, it's best not to use it unless you have a supervision on it. And then he writes, he says, I myself never use it, except if I'm in shul and there's a chabura, a group of people that are making a lachaim. I don't want to make myself look elitish, aloof from the rest, so I take a little to make a lachaim. Now, she was talking about the Meshach Feinstein, who was from Dibur, they had brought the leaders of the generation. Yet this is what Ramesha Ben Bezat was writing. Kama Kasidim Gedolim. There were many, many great saints in Israel. But they would only fulfill their chumras, their Hidulim. Not amongst the populace, but Hatznei Alecha Sima Shema Lekecha, when they were alone. And then finally, this is what we would hear all of the time. Intel speaking. And then finally, they would quote another Gemara, very, very often. That was the Gemara in Yom HaPeikot. Yo'afes Hashem Alekecha. You shall love the Lord your God. And the Gemara says, what does it mean you shall love the Lord your God? Not only you should love Him. It means more than that. Sheshem Shemayim is Ayiv Al Yotko. You are obligated to cause others to love Hashem. How do you, Rashi says, Chavercho, you are obligated to cause others and your friends to love Hashem. How do you cause others? So the Gemara says, if you go and you learn Chumash, you learn Mishnah, you learn Gemara, and then you go out in the business world and your business is done amongst people with the highest standard of truthfulness, and you speak kindly to all of the people. And the Rambam here adds, he says, you dress in very, very nice clothing, and your Mahuda Ben Abdiyas, you're very acceptable to all the people and you mix with them. What do people say? How fortunate is that person who taught his son Torah? How fortunate is that Rebbe who taught his disciple Torah? Or to the other people who have not had the privilege of studying Torah, how beautiful are the ways of the Torah. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, these are my servants Israel, which I take pride. This is how you fulfill you shall love the Lord your God, you shall cause others to love Him. Then there's the converse, that if someone goes and he learns Chumash and Mishnah and Gemara, and he goes out into the marketplace and his business standards are not what they should be, and he does not speak nicely with the people, and he does not dress nicely, and he does not mix nicely, what do people say? They say, oy, how misfortunate is his father that sent him to learn Torah, that this Rebbe taught him Torah. I don't want any part of it. What do we see from here? We see that the responsibility of the individual is not merely to himself, to his wife, and to his children. The responsibility of the Jew is to have influence on as many, many Jews as possible. And we see further, when we speak of influence, it doesn't mean that you have to sit down with someone and give them a sales talk on Yiddishkeit. It means by example. If they see you and your ways are kamanoi, they are ways of beauty and ways of uprightness, then you have fulfilled the greatest influence, because people are drawn to this. And you see, we see from here, that if through your actions you can cause people to go further away from Torah, you cause a division, you cause a gulf. This is not saintliness at all. And heaven forbid, you are distancing people from Hashem and from Torah. The Midrash says, Kol nisayim et ibrei teyre ve'en arei min al-shemeihem. If someone says a sermon, if someone says all the words of Torah, and they are not pleasant to the people who hear it, mutar, it would have been better that he would not have said it, because he's distancing people from Torah. And of course, Baruch the Almighty said, Mi'ata is Hashem Elokecha. I want you to bring people to love my Torah and to love me. And this is what we always heard in Yeshiva. The fact is, it goes back yet to Reb Chaim von Oistman, where he, when he made his Yeshiva, he was very demanding that his Talmidim should be dressed perfectly, in order they should be this influence in the community. And the Renata Hersh, this was the Altavist of Blocker, Nossen Spiel Finkel. He was an extremist. So Blocker was known, Slobodki in Litter was known, where their students, their disciples, walked down the streets as a prince. And I recently read that many, many years ago, when gentlemen went with canes, he tried to influence yeshiva students, they also should go with canes. So people will look up and say, that's a yeshiva man. This is what I want my son to be. And this was also held very strongly in Delos. We have this phenomenon. From one end, we are losing large segments of the Jewish nation. From the other end, we are experiencing a golden renaissance of Torah leadership. The great tragedy is that one community doesn't seem to have influence on the other. It's important to note one of the exceptions in the whole world today is the South African Jewish community. May we go forward, continue with the golden age, the renaissance of Jewish growth and development, but at the same time to bring Achenu called B'nai Yisrael, our brethren and the whole of Israel, closer together, closer to Torah, not farther, not further about, where we can fulfill the Yo'ato Eis Hashem Elokecha, you shall love the Lord your God, bring others to love Him and His Torah. Thank you very much, and I pray this to you.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085 and via post at PO Box 66226 Broadway 2020 Johannesburg, South Africa.